morning. It's good to be with you today. Good to have those of you that are visiting. We have several visitors here, and as we have been doing the past few weeks, we are in the middle of a study on elders and deacons. In the way of review, what we have looked at is the qualifications of those that could be considered to be an elder. There are family considerations when it comes to those individuals. The must be the husband of one wife, rule his own house well, and also rules his own children well and has believing children. So those are qualifications regarding the family, and regarding his reputation, he must be blameless. He must have a good temperament, handle his money well, and not be greedy for money or filthy lucre, not given to wine, and have a good testimony among those who are outside or those who are not members of the local congregation, but have a good reputation in his work in the community and that kind of thing. His character must be that he is a godly man, that he treats others well, and certainly has the attitude and heart of a servant when it comes to the responsibilities toward the brethren. In that regard, regarding the work of an elder must be a capable teacher. He must be a steward of God or a servant of God, and certainly be an example to the flock. And so that's really a rundown of what we see of the qualifications of elders that we've looked at in the past few lessons. Last week, we talked about the qualifications of deacons. These qualifications are very similar to those of elders, but some are different. That an elder, a deacon, needs to be reverent, not double-tongued, consistent with his word and tell the truth, of course, not given to much wine, not greedy for money, holding the mystery of faith with a pure conscience, and also be found blameless, the husband of one wife, and rule the children and their house as well. And there's also instruction regarding wives that are included here in 1 Timothy. And that's what we want to look at this morning. I've considered the instruction regarding wives to be the most overlooked or often overlooked qualification of an elder. And it's very frequent that brethren look very meticulously at the lives of the men that are considered to be, to be considered for the work of the eldership or for a deacon, but sometimes fail to carefully look at their wives. And many congregations regret the day that they made that mistake, because that's something that could have been avoided by looking carefully at the directions that the Apostle Paul gave in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 11. Here he says, likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderous, temperate, and faithful in all things. Sometimes this passage is ignored in respect to elders because it's situated in the midst of the instructions concerning the deacon's qualification. So some have assumed that this only applies to deacons' wives, and I think that's a mistake, and that's certainly not logical that this would only apply to the wives of deacons. You could also note some of your translations may have the word "there" italicized, and that means that word was added by translators to in an effort to clarify. And I think it fits better if you take that word "there" out, so it's not applying in just the context of deacons, but the whole context here in 1 Timothy chapter 3 is talking about elders and deacons, and that these attributes of the wives would apply to both the wives of elders and deacons. And all Christian wives certainly should seek to achieve these attitudes, that you must be reverent, not slanderous, temperate, and faithful in all things. That's a goal that all Christian women should strive to be. But it's something that is absolutely necessary for the wife of an elder or a deacon. They are required to possess those things. So you could say indirectly their behavior and attitude constitute yet another qualification for a man who would serve in either capacity. And so we don't want to overlook this qualification. And certainly, it goes hand in hand that a husband and wife, when they have the right kind of relationship that they should have together, they have an influence on one another. And the family relationships that the elder or the deacon have are so integral to the qualifications that he has. And the elder must be a good leader, you know, not only among the brethren, but among his own family. He needs to lead and correct and oversee his family, and he also needs to do that concerning God's flock. So I think it's important that we understand that this is an important factor in the qualification of an elder and a deacon. We'll be talking mostly about how it applies to elders. So in the previous lessons, we've examined the importance of an elder demonstrating the ability to lead and to rule and to guide and exercise authority over his children, and the example that he is both within his house and among Christians. And it's also important to understand the effect that the wife has on that man. A wife should be a true helper when it comes to somebody that is trying to be an elder or a deacon. She will be invaluable to him in that work. She's not performing the same function as the elder, but you think about how that would play out, that she would necessarily be privy to much of what the elder is having to deal with. And so certainly you can see that she shouldn't be a malicious gossip, and we talked about that, touched on that in the last lesson, that would be a horrible thing for the wife of an elder not to be able to control her tongue and be a gossip and hurt the Lord's work. And so the elder needs a companion who is dedicated to the cause of the Lord as he is. And I think that's something that every husband and wife should desire for themselves and for their family, is that both the husband and wife are dedicated to the Lord, and they help each other in their effort to go to heaven. You know, I don't know what would have happened to me if I hadn't met Jarrell. I can't go back in time and see what that would have been like, but I don't think it would have been good spiritually. That she has been somebody that has been helpful to me spiritually, that she has kept me from saying things or doing things that I shouldn't. In fact, I think a lot about my dad and the relationship that my mother had with him. And one thing that he mentioned quite often is that, you know, he would write letters and have discussions with people, you know, verbally through email or through letters, and most of the time he let her read those before he sent those off. And sometimes he'd be a little sour or sarcastic in the way that he said some things, especially if he was in disagreement with somebody on a particular thing and he became impatient with not being able to get through to that person. And sometimes my mom would say to him, you know, Frank, you may win the argument, but you won't win the man. And so he'd go back and he'd rewrite it, and he said that every time she said that, she was right, that it was not written the way that he needed it. And those of you that knew my dad, you knew that he was outspoken, would say what was on his mind usually, but you think about how much worse he would have been had he not had my mom there to rein him in. And you think about me and some of the things that I say sometimes, it would be a lot worse if Jarrell weren't there trying to rein me in, or I knew what she was going to. Sometimes I can just look at her and I don't say something because of the influence that she has on me. And so that's the way that it ought to be. We ought to be helping one another as a husband and wife. And it's very essential to those who are in leadership to have that person that is going to help them, be a true helper with the work of the elder, even though she's not the elder herself. But she is going to have a great deal of influence on him as he tries to do this good work. And so with some of the things that we see in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 11 that we've read. And basically, the lesson is going to come from this passage. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Some translations say that that she is to be grave. King James says she's to be grave. New King James says to be reverent. New Revised Standard Version says serious. The English Standard Version says dignified. So you get the idea here of what this term grave means. She cannot be indifferent to her duties is what this means. That she is serious about what it is that she is to do. The jobs of wife, the jobs of a mother, and the job of just being a Christian, it requires a certain seriousness. And that does not mean that you're sour all the time and that you never crack a smile. That's not what we're talking about when we say grave. Somebody that, you know, when you hear that word, you may think, well, somebody that's always got a downward look on life. That's not what grave means. It means to be serious. It doesn't imply that somebody can't enjoy a joke or possess a sense of humor. But it clearly asserts that she must not be foolish or indifferent toward any of her responsibilities, either as a wife, a Christian, or a mother, that she takes those duties and those things that she is to do very seriously and doesn't neglect those responsibilities. The fulfillment of this requirement it's shown in the way that she speaks. It's shown in the way that, you know, she interacts with others. It's reflected in her dress. And there shouldn't be any, you know, reason to look at the way that she dresses and wonder whether or not she's a Christian. And that's something that's very important and sometimes is forgotten. Just the way that she handles herself, carries herself, her language, her treatment of others, that all indicates that she is grave or reverent or serious in her responsibilities as a wife, mother, and an elder's wife, that she must be not indifferent to her responsibilities. Also, an elder's wife cannot be someone who is a slanderer. She must control her tongue. Vine's Expository Dictionary of New Testament Words says of that word that it means accusing falsely. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 11, you know, the reference here is to those who are given to finding fault with the demeanor and conduct of others and spreading innuendos and criticisms in the church. My father sometimes said there were people that majored on minors that were fault finders or nitpickers. And, you know, and he called us that many times. He said, you're nitpicking. Well, or straining at gnats. Sometimes there are those that have that kind of attitude. A couple of years ago in Atlanta, there was a service manager for Konica Minolta. And he's very critical, especially of people that are in my role for some reason. And I was, you know, he asked me how something was going, a demonstration that we had for a customer. And he stopped me in the middle of my sentence because I had told him that the girls that came to see the demonstration seemed very impressed with something or other in the software. And he stopped and he said, now, were they girls or were they women? Because there is a difference. And he started going off on a tangent. And I just had it. And I told him, I said, I'd just like to be able to finish the sentence without you finding something to criticize in it. And, you know, some other service techs that were there that worked under him, you know, just came up to me afterwards and said, thank you for saying that. Because people didn't usually say that to him. But that had been something that had been building and building and building. That he's not a person that you could talk to and finish a sentence without there being something nitpicky or critical, such as me calling a woman a girl or a girl a woman, and that there's some difference in that he has to explain to me. So we have sometimes that kind of attitude where there's someone that says something or does something, and we look through a microscope at their life with a magnifying glass and find any kind of fault with them that is there. Does that sound like a good attitude to have as an elder's wife or a deacon's wife or an elder or a deacon? Is that let's find as much fault with everybody as we can and try to magnify those things and bring them to everybody's attention? That's not what Paul tells us that we need to do. A woman who is a slanderer is one that has that attitude of majoring on minors and needs to have self-control in that regard and not be one that is going to be majoring on faults. That can really wreak havoc in a church. And how much more so if that woman whose husband is an elder, who may know more about the spiritual problems of some members than others. Because, along with her husband, she is looked to as being an example of Christ-like living. If the elders are doing their work of being a shepherd and not just an administrator, we've talked about that, but they're actually doing the work of shepherding, they will be regularly working with brethren who have weaknesses and brethren who may be involved in sins that need to be privately admonished and taught in a process of discipline and trying to improve spiritually. And you can imagine how those kind of efforts would be completely turned upside down and damaged by slanders and inappropriate and ill-timed criticism and gossip and not controlling your tongue if those kind of things were talked about. Elders' wives are not elders. But you consider the relationship that a husband and wife have and that they are one flesh. And they are one flesh with the men who serve in that capacity. So if the sinful conduct of a wife is there, it's going to have an influence. Especially if it's a situation where the tongue cannot be controlled and there's slander or there's gossip. So it's very, very important. I mentioned last week of situations that I knew that really caused a damage to an eldership because of the behavior of a wife. So don't overlook this and don't minimize it. It's important. We all need to use self-control, and certainly in regard to the wives of leaders, it's absolutely necessary. Also, in the same vein, self-control, the King James Version uses the word that she needs to be sober. The New King James uses the word temperate to describe an approach to life that is discreet or moderate and in control of oneself and is able to control desires and impulses. And it's really the same qualification that's required of the husbands. It's the same qualification that we see in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, where it's mentioned as being a qualification for the bishop or overseer. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach. And so it's the same thing, the same qualification for the husband and for the wife. And it's repeated also in Titus chapter 1 and verse 8. When we think about elders, we usually think about those that are older. And we've mentioned before why that is, that you need to have believing children. That's necessarily going to be an older person who has children that are able to obey the gospel of Christ. And so elders, by reason of age, will most of the time have wives who are older as well, who would fall into the category of what we read in Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, where Paul admonishes the older women. And I know nobody likes to be called older, but we just have to deal with it when we get there. But Titus chapter 2, verse 3, he says, the older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. So the instruction here is for all older women, but especially those who are going to be the wives of those in leadership. It's very clear that an elder's wife, an older woman, certainly has an active role in the work of the church by her example and by the support that she gives to her husband, and that she should be one that the younger women who are going to be admonished by her, that they can look to her as an example. And someone that is not, that we can't look to as an example, you know, certainly wouldn't fit the qualification here. And I think that's a great point for any of us. If we would not want somebody following our example, if we don't want our kids talking like we do, or we don't want our kids acting like we do, or losing our temper like we do, we need to adjust our temperament. We need to adjust our actions if we're living in such a way that we wouldn't want our kids to go down the same path, or that we wouldn't want to be an example to others. That's a sign that we need to make some changes. So the wife here, her example, like that of her husband, is going to be observed. And I know, growing up in a household where my father was a preacher, and he was a preacher and an elder at times, that we always knew that we lived in a glass house. That people looked, and you know, whether it's right or wrong, you can argue that, but the preacher's kid or the elder's kid is going to be looked at in a different way, or is sometimes, than the rest of the congregation. We didn't always like that and didn't think that was fair. And I never liked being called the preacher's kid, and that was a term that a lot of people had for me. But, you know, what did that mean? It meant that if I made a mistake, everybody was very quick to point that out. And somebody else could have made the same mistake and it wouldn't have had the same effect or drawn as much attention. But when the preacher's kids are misbehaving or the elder's kids are misbehaving, then, you know, that's terrible, isn't it? But what we see here is that this is a role where people look to you as an example. If you're to rule your household well as an elder, or you're to have control of your home as a deacon, then you have a responsibility to uphold that, and people do look to you as an example, and you should be living in such a way that you can be an example. And so the wife is going to be an example like her husband, and she will be observed and used as a model. So she must be sober and temperate in her behavior and behave in such a way that she'll be a good testimony and a good example. Like I said, this is the exact same qualifications that is required of the husbands. And I neglect to put that verse up there, Titus chapter 2, 3 through 5. Also, she is told that she must be faithful in all things. And so that's pretty broad, right? That's a very broad-ranging qualification. So what does that include, that she must be faithful in all things? Obviously, she needs to be faithful to the Lord in fulfilling all these things that we've already talked about, in her behavior and that in her worship and her teaching and her faithfulness to her husband. That she is morally faithful to her husband, and that she is a helper. And if there's still children at home, that she is capable in taking care of those responsibilities as a wife and a mother. So being faithful in all things is certainly a very broad-ranging category. But it just shows that in all things that she does, whatever area of her life that you look at, that she is a strong Christian example in the way that she handles herself with her brethren and with her children with her husband, the things that she does, and she doesn't have any of these negative qualities that we talked about, being a gossip or slanderer, but you can look to that person as being helpful and wanting to be an example and use the opportunities that she has to support the work of the church and the leadership. At the risk of being redundant, is we just say again that God expects all women to be faithful in all things. We don't certainly need to think that only your husbands or wives that are married to a deacon or married to an elder, they're the only ones that have to have these qualities, and everybody else, it's just a free-for-all. That's not what we're saying here. God expects all women to be faithful in all things. But she, the one that we're talking about here in regard to being the wife of an elder, she should be somebody that has achieved these things, not just working toward them or hoping one day that she will have these qualities, but that she does have these. And we also know that we're always growing and always becoming better, but there should be some degree of having achieved these things and being the right kind of example. And we certainly have a need for this kind of woman today in the church. We know from the very beginning when God created Adam, and God looked at Adam and said it's not good for him to be alone. He needed help. It wasn't good for him to be alone. And at times, I know just from the relationship with my parents that it was very difficult sometimes for my dad to be an elder. It was very strenuous work, and he needed support. And he got that from my mother. He can't effectively do his work if his wife is one of the biggest problems. She doesn't need to be a problem in that relationship. And the work of an elder, as I saw it personally, sometimes there would be discussions and studies and confrontations and meetings and talking to brethren in private about their issues and problems, and my dad could come home quite stressed about those things. And my mother understood that stress, and she could help him from becoming discouraged. And sometimes he was discouraged, but she would talk to him and build him up, and was a great help to him in whatever way she could be. I don't think he could have been an effective elder without her help. Also, we saw in one of our previous lessons that an elder is to be hospitable, show kindness to strangers. And it would certainly not be impossible for an elder to be hospitable without his wife's assistance, but it certainly would be difficult. And a wife can be very helpful in that qualification as well. Women who don't possess the qualifications we've studied this morning will not serve their husbands well when the husbands have been away for many hours helping others, and when they're having this responsibility and having to confront challenges in opposition to the truth and whatever is going on with that work. We need wives that will help with this work, and that's why I believe that we have this instruction here from Paul. That it's not just about the husbands, it's not just about the men to be elders and deacons, but the wives have a responsibility here, and it's because their help, their assistance, their support is vitally necessary to that man that takes on that role. It's not in the Bible, but it's been said that behind every good man there is a good woman, and I believe that to be true, that you can usually see that. And there may be some good men that could be a lot better men if they had the right support that they should have. But I hope these things will be useful to you, and that it will encourage you to put on these attributes in your life. Whether you are a man or a woman, all the things that we've talked about here are vital to our lives as Christians, that we need to be people who are serious about the work of God, and that we are able to control ourselves and have a good influence and be a good example to others. But there's a special responsibility to those things if you're being considered for leadership or if you're a wife of one of those leaders. It's absolutely necessary to embody those characteristics. If you are subject to the invitation today and have not been obedient to the gospel of Christ, there's no better time to do that than today. We don't have the promise of tomorrow. If you've been putting off doing something that you know that you need to do, whether that's being buried in baptism to rise and walk a new life, or you, there's something in your life that's separating you from God and needs to be taken care of, don't put it off. If we can help you in any way, please come while we stand and sing.